KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Good morning to you again, Mrs. Castro.
Good morning, Julie.
Very excited to have yet another very special guest with us today. And as always, I'll let you make the introductions.
Thank you. Well, I'm very fortunate this morning to get to spend some time with one of my favorite people on the planet, and that is Mr. Marvin Myers. He is a distinguished alumnus from Fresno State, and he was actually awarded that in 2012. The first opportunity that I had to meet Marvin was actually out on one of his favorite places on campus, and that was the football field. President Castro and I were going out there to meet the team for our first time, and it was very exciting. They were having one of their practices, and it was a very hot day. And our athletic director, Thomas Bay, said, "I'd love to have you meet one of our biggest fans," and that's Mr. Myers. And Marvin was there watching the team practice. He came over and said hello. And I knew instantly that I liked him because he reminded me a lot of my dad and some of my uncles. And he's just such a genuine person that once you get to spend some time with him, you're going to... I'm always bugging him that I want to see him and his wife, Tish, more and more. And I'd like to thank you, Marvin, for taking the time to be here today with us.
My pleasure.
The first time that I met Martin was out on the football field, as I said earlier, but then that was just a quick introduction. When Joe and I really had a chance to get to talk more and more with his wife, Tish, and Marvin was at the dinner to celebrate the opening of the Myers Family Sports Medicine Center that their family was so generous in making possible on the campus. And during the course of that dinner, we were able to hear your personal story and get to hear about some of the favorite things that you and Tish like to do and how you like to travel. And that was our opportunity to get to know you more on a personal level. And I know that Joe and I just felt an instant connection with the two of you.
Well, that makes me very happy.
Just to let our listeners know, I think that, you know, there are times in your life when you meet a person and you're very impressed by the level that they've been able to achieve in their professional life. And many times that person is referred to as a master of their craft. And I've told you this before, I believe that you are a master farmer. You take farming and the way that you approach it to a different level. Joe and I had the opportunity of going out and touring your farm in Mendota. And when you were taking us around and describing the watershed project to us and how you came up with the idea for it and your way of looking into the future and not only seeing that there might be an issue ahead, but what can we do to prepare for it? And you're so innovative and creative. And you also, when you need an expert's advice, you go and you find the guy who knows how to make it happen. What is it about your personality and maybe your background that makes you look at things in a different view than just the short term?
People ask me that question very often. They call me a visionary.
Yes.
And of course, you know, I don't consider myself that, but it's just in my breeding.
Uh-huh.
Fresno State, what did I get out of Fresno State? And it taught me that if you don't have the answer to a problem, the answer's there somewhere.
Yes.
Go out and get it. And it's always been my philosophy, and I've educated my son and my grandson with that mentality that can't isn't in our vocabulary.
Wonderful.
It doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And basics is hard work, dedication, don't slack.
Yes.
And don't ask your help to do something you wouldn't do yourself.
Sure. You're definitely a roll your sleeves up guy.
We have to be that way, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you can't sit in the office and dictate. You got to be in the field, and I'm kind of a guy that likes to walk the fields. As the older
yes.
I get, it's a little more difficult.
Right.
But that's what we do.
Well, I see that you grew up in Los Angeles, and you attended Pierce School of Agriculture in the San Fernando Valley. What was it that put Fresno State on the map for you to transfer here?
When I graduated, I went to Cal Poly, and I went to UC Davis, and I went to Fresno State. And I loved the campus in Fresno State because it was brand new when I was here.
Oh, wonderful.
We had to commute, which is now the City College campus, Fresno City, we had to commute for our ag classes over there, over here where we are now.
Yes.
But I got to meet a lot of professors. I met the dean, Lloyd Dollar, and just talked to different instructors and students. And I said, this place is where I need to go, because this is an atmosphere of, and I was so impressed with Valley Agriculture. And honestly, I was an animal husbandry major when I was in junior in Pierce. And I had that in my mind when I came to Fresno, mm-hmm. Fresno State. And over time, I realized, you're not going to be a cattle guy. You're going to be a farmer. And I lived in the hog barn. I lived in the sheep barn as a herdsman.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Well, it was no rent. And so I was able to be a herdsman in the hog barn, and it's interesting, I took a tour of the campus, and it's still there, and
yes.
It was really neat, you know, it brought back old memories.
Well, that's taking hands-on experience to a different level when you're actually living in the barn with the animals.
We laugh about it. I had a date, you know, and a gal, so I said, well, come on over here, because there's a sow having pigs now, piglets.
That was
and
your test, right?
I can't leave, you know? So she'd sit and wait for me.
And is Fresno State where you met Patricia?
No, I met Tish on a blind date.
That is a great blind
in
date.
Bakersfield.
Blind date.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who set that up?
A friend of mine that lived in, a real good friend, called me up and said, I got a galley I want you to meet. And I'm going, yeah, you know, I wasn't really keen on it.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody's really keen on a blind date, but at least you were courageous.
Well, I had to go because he insisted, so I went down there and we went out to a party that she wanted to go to. I was very impressed, a very lovely girl, and had a neat daughter that I fell in love with. First impressions. And then after a while, we got to talk a little bit, and then she went to Europe.
Oh,
and I'm going, I didn't realize how much I missed her. Being in Europe. And I'd always ask her parents, did you get any cards? I didn't get any cards.
Postcards. That's sweet. So absence really did make the heart grow fonder.
It did.
Now, you were drafted into the Army. Was that before or after you had met?
That was before.
It was before.
It was in 1957.
In 57. And you had an opportunity to work on the atomic bomb project in Nevada.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
When I got drafted during boot camp, they gave us an interview of our college education and, you know, what did you do and so on. I was very apprehensive. What are they doing this for? Because I'm in the infantry and I'm going to go to Korea.
Uh-huh.
But just prior to be shipped out, they pulled me out of the line and gave me new orders as you're going to Washington, D.C., which I did. And there was 24 other young men from around the country that were in the same position I was.
Okay.
And we didn't know what we were going to do there, why we were going to do it, what was this all about, but we were cleared for top secret.
Oh, my goodness.
So that made me really think, man, we're into something big time.
What did I get myself into?
So then they took us to Bethesda Naval Air Station, where they irradiated hogs.
Oh.
And to see what the symptoms were of their dying,
mm-hmm.
and if they could survive. And so we were the ones that had to document all that 24 hours a day. We lived off base, mm-hmm. and swore to secrecy. And then when that was over, they sent us to Nevada test site, and they had thousands of pigs. We still didn't know exactly what was this all about.
Right.
But once we got there, we were told that this is an atom bomb that can be shot out of a bazooka.
Oh.
And how far away did the shooter have to be not to get irradiated?
Mm-hmm.
And so without having to go in all the detail,
right.
We were all in charge of putting the pigs out in the field in machine gun nests, pillboxes, armored cars, tanks, all that.
So, oh, wow.
And there was ground zero and then 800 yards out. Now, interesting, a lot of GIs were there,
mm-hmm.
not just us. And they asked, who is married, who has one kid, who has two kids, who's single? And what turned out that the married kids with two kids had to go to ground zero and all the way up.
Uh-huh.
And there's reason for that because mm-hmm. of the radiation. And it was a hot bomb.
Oh, my goodness.
And what we did is we put the pigs in these areas. And then after the bomb exploded, we were go back in, pick up the pig that you put in there, whatever's left of him, take it to a circle that is duplicate, mm-hmm. and put him there and document anything that you found. And that was our job.
So that all of your experience that you had with being at Fresno State and in the barn, that was what really attracted them to matching you up to that project?
Yes. If it wasn't for that, I'd be in Korea.
Oh, my goodness.
Very fortunate. And then, you know, it was an amazing thing. The experience being in and seeing the atom bomb.
It sounds like it.
I tell people when they ask me about it, I tell them, you never want to see that.
You don't.
It is so final.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, then I see that you, after you got out of the military, that you were operating the Myers Agricultural Chemicals for 16
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm. Sold it.
And then you sold it in 77, and you began what sounds like your passion, farming.
Yeah, I had started a little bit of farming while I had the company and sort of increasing it slowly but surely.
Uh-huh.
And over time, it grew.
And you have, how many acres do you have now?
6,000.
6,000.
And then we've managed for another couple of guys, another 3,000.
Okay. And you have almonds, cherries, pistachios, and olives.
Mm-hmm. We used to be big cotton farmers, and melons, and we grew everything, but mm-hmm. the cost of production outweighed the return, so we decided to bail out and go into permanent crop.
And I know that you are a big voice for the valley as far as the issues with water and with the drought. And I know that you told me that that made a big part of you choosing what crops to go towards now is because of the necessity of having to find things that could survive on less water than some of those other crops.
High tech, very, very conservative. Mm-hmm.
And then it says here that in the mid-1990s, you bought the old Spreckles Sugar property, and that was actually the part of your ranch that Joe and I were able to go and mm-hmm. tour. And when we drove up there, I had fond memories because that's where every kid in the valley would go at least once a year for a field trip, was to see the Spreckles Sugar plant.
I remember that.
Watching all the sugar beets go up. And when you were taking us around and you were describing the process of water banking, and you were so excited, I could just see the light in your eye. And we had the opportunity to meet Jason Dean, who's the biologist and the program manager there. And he was also telling us the process of banking water and how that soil was perfectly set for doing that. And it just seemed like your own personal sandbox where you did experiments, because you told me there were parts of the property that you tried and it didn't work, and then you finally found the right combination. And we'll have a link on our website so that people can read more about the Myers Water Bank and Wildlife Project. But the area has such a peacefulness to it. When we were out there, just a calm and getting to see the wildlife, the birds that were there. And I was thinking how lively it must be in the springtime with the, you said you have foxes out there too, just everything running around. And how you've shared that with children in the valley, with the different projects with schools for them to come out there and see it. I think that's fantastic that you have opened it up, because you see how important it is for kids in the valley who are being raised in an agricultural setting that might not understand or get to appreciate the depth of it. Tell us a little bit about how rewarding it is for you when you see a child connect with the land.
Yeah, that is the highlight of my days when I do go out, when the classes are there. When I did my first environmental assessment to be able to bring water into that area and put it in the ground, I did mention that I wanted to give something back to society, and I want to have a wildlife area where I can educate youth and anybody that would like to come out and see this and understand that it's right here in your backyard.
Yes.
And I hired Jason and gave him his head and told him, go for it, and help me put it together. And then we actually developed a curriculum. We had 6 instructors from the Fresno County Office of Education assisted us from 3rd grade to 12th grade. Mm-hmm. So the kids get credit. It's an educational thing. It's just not a field trip.
Right.
And then we brought in Scout Island, and they brought in all of the different wildlife explanations and all. So the thrill I get is watching the kids respond. Bond.
Yes.
From the little 3rd grader, watching those kids get so hyped up when they see a ladybug or
right.
a praying mantis or whatever.
Yes.
And that's what it's all about. And mm-hmm. then the older kids, when they see all the wildlife, and then, you know, the calf was born right in front of them.
Wow.
And
awesome.
As it dropped out and trying to get on its legs, the kids just freaked out. And I got real great pleasure out of seeing the response. And so did the instructor.
Yes.
We get a lot of feedback from the instructors. Kids want to come back and come back. And we have CART. Uh-huh. You know, they come out and do projects. We have scouts come out and do projects. It's just everything that I get a thrill out of giving back. I just enjoy. And I'm so glad that I'm able to do it financially. And it's just something I really wanted to do. And I think my son understands it now of why am I doing this on top of having the water bank.
Yes. And while we were out there, you were talking to us about another piece of property that you have that is going to be a wildlife preserve or bank.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting piece. When we bought it, my son wanted to go farm it. He was getting ready to put a disc in it. I just, no, stop. You got to do an endangered species survey. And lo and behold, we did, and all this wildlife was there, and Fish and Wildlife, Federal Fish and Wildlife, and California Fish and Wildlife, they went crazy and said, you got to make this into a mitigation bank.
Okay.
And not touch this ground.
So, how many species? I remember you telling me that there were
there must be, I don't know, 70 or 80 species.
Can you believe that?
Including plants.
Wow.
On land that's not been touched, not been farmed.
That's amazing.
It's unbelievable that they were amazed.
They were amazed that there were so many species here. And it's just, they told me, no, we'll do it in a mitigation bank where you sell credits to developers or to people that have projects that maybe are invasive to a certain species. They can buy a credit from me and they can go ahead and do their project. And it's like Caltrans, PG&E, they all need credits.
Yes.
So this is one of a kind in Fresno County.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so they talked us into it, and taken a long time to get all the permits and all the easements and all the stuff, but it's getting done.
Well, I think that is going to be such a treasure for the Valley to preserve that, and for you to be able to see the value in preserving it. You know, thank you. Thank you for the children that are going to be able to see it in the future and to have that. To have it and to know the value of it and to want to be in a position where you can set it aside and be willing to do it.
I want you to come out.
I can't wait
during
to
a
it.
Class.
I'd love
he's
to.
He's booked up classes all the way well into the spring.
Oh, my
for
goodness.
For classes the teachers want to bring their new class.
Sure.
You know, I was on the State Board of Food and Ag for a while, and they had our water meeting down at Spreckles. And everybody came, and we invited four young people that had been to our class at the water bank. Mm-hmm. And they've been back several times, and asked them, tell the Secretary of Agriculture what you got out of this.
Yes.
That was spectacular. Three kids, no rehearsal, top of their head, what they got out of this, lived in Mendota and said, I've always seen this ugly mass of water out here, and I never paid any attention until I did this class with Mr. Dean, and he showed me all the living creatures and all the wildlife that's out here. And she explained that, and you could have heard a pin drop.
Right.
They were so impressed that the Secretary of Agriculture issued $2,000 scholarships to them.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it because overwhelmed you everybody.
You opened up a different perspective for those kids. And as an adult going out there, it was impressive to me. I could just imagine from a child's eyes getting to see everything that's under the surface and the way that you have it set up to where you get to be a part of it. It's not just something you're reading about or watching on TV. They get to actually go out and feel it and get dirty and smell it. And, you know, my greatest memories of growing up in the Valley are all tied to the sense of the fresh cut alfalfa, to laying back on the grass, to getting out and the itchiness of the hay when you're pitching it, you know. And those are the things that make it real, and that's what makes it a passion for the next generation. I had asked you earlier about how you spent your New Year's. And I love that you said that you have a tradition of getting all your family together, your children, your grandchildren. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's an annual event. On New Year's Eve, we go up to our cabin up at Shaver, and it's an old rustic cabin. It's not fancy about it. And New Year's Eve, we'll have our food and barbecue. And then everybody settles in around the fire. We have the TV on so we can watch New York and all that. But we all start telling stories. Everybody can tell stories, including the youngest.
The tiniest ones.
Yeah. Yes. Tell any story you want. And then we tell stories about our childhood.
Uh-huh.
And all the way around. And the kids were just captivated in something that they've never heard before.
Sure.
We save it for them.
Yes. What a wonderful gift.
And everyone tells stories. And it goes on into the night. And then all of a sudden it's New Year's. And then we all go home and go to bed.
Oh, I love that because that is priceless. And Joe and I had the pleasure of meeting one of your grandsons, and that's Trevor. And he has olives that he's farming out there on part of the property. And it was very exciting for us to get to have him take the time to show us his orchard. And I loved it when he pulled an olive off and he rubbed it between his hands and showed me, look, you can smell the oil. You can smell the richness of the oil. And he was just lit up when he was talking about it and talking about how soon he was going to get to harvest. I was hoping to go back there during harvest time, and maybe this year it'll happen. But he was also showing off the new harvester that he had. And let me tell you, Julie, if you ever have seen the movie Transformers, uh-huh. where something looks like a car and then it turns into a gigantic, this harvester that Trevor has, when you stand next to the tire is bigger than you are, and it lifts up on hydraulics, and it goes along, and it takes the olives right off of the tree. It goes over them, over
that
the
trees. That's so cool.
It is the neatest thing ever. And he was sharing that with us, and he was really excited because it had just been delivered not too much
Correct.
Before
mm-hmm.
that.
Right.
But the connection that you have with mentoring him, but allowing him to learn by his own mistakes, too,
yes.
the process of farming. And it's very tricky in knowing exactly when you should harvest because that the effect on the yield can be drastically different just between 2 weeks.
Correct.
Or if you wait too long, you can lose it all. So he was telling us how he was trying to figure out when the right time was. And it was just exciting for us to see someone who's the same age as our oldest son there. And he's a Fresno State student, very proud that he's a Fresno State student, out there actually doing it and being able to have you as a mentor and for that guidance. I think he's going to follow right in your footsteps as being a great innovator in the future for agriculture.
Yeah, I've learned something from other farmers who have kids that want to get into farming. It is, and as you well know, it's very difficult for a farmer, an older farmer, to give up responsibility, to give up the farm.
Sure.
The kid, they put their thumb on him and you do it my way, and that's it. And young children or young students or whatever, of their father is on them so hard that they leave. They don't want to stay.
Yeah, it can stifle.
And I've seen a lot of sons leave their fathers, say, I'm not going to work for you. I can't stand you.
Oh, no.
And that's what happens. I've seen them get in a fight.
Oh.
I've seen fights on rice levees and so on. And the sons leave. I looked at that and I said, how did you learn, Marvin? You learn by doing.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you let your son and your grandson learn by doing? If they make mistakes, you let them know you know they made mistakes.
Uh-huh.
Don't make it twice. And they learn by doing.
Yes.
Because I could dictate to them all the time, and it'd be like talking to that wall over there. But
right.
if you let them do it, and then congratulate them when they do right.
Sure.
Don't always come down on them. I learned that with Trevor.
Uh-huh.
You know, and he was depressed. He didn't want to see me because I was always negative. But after time, now I'm proud of what he does. He's got it and he understands in the field, making it happen. And
that's a great lesson for any parent.
Yeah, you just got to let them go and you got to let them do and let them start using their brain, because if you don't,
mm-hmm.
you're going to drive them away. And I've seen too many fathers drive their sons away from the farm.
Well, and it's also putting your trust in their ability to be innovative and take it to another level. You've done as much as you can with what you were given in the time frame you were. But with the way technology is and how it's going to affect agriculture in the future, we need to allow young farmers that flexibility to think outside the box the same way you did with the, you know, with water and with other things like that.
They've got the tech. It's way over my head.
So in keeping on that line with your commitment towards the future of agriculture, President Castro has assembled a commission on the future of agriculture, and I know that he's very proud, as am I, that you've agreed to be a part of that. Could you tell us a little bit about some of the goals of that commission and what you hope to achieve?
Yeah, I'm very honored to be chosen by Dr. Castro. The commission, from my point of view, is there to expand on why is Fresno State not number one in the state. I recall when my speech for Top Dog, mm-hmm. I wanted, my vision was to see Fresno State number one in academia and athletics. Well, yes. I think we've accomplished the athletics. Now we got to do the academia.
Right.
But I think the awareness of Fresno State, where it should be number one right in the valley, and where do these agricultural graduates go after they leave Fresno State? And no one really knew that answer.
Okay.
And I think the university is looking into where do all these young people, after they graduate, go?
Mm-hmm.
And why is it that the university loses touch with a lot of their agricultural graduates? We want them to come back as alumni.
Definitely.
And work. And one of the other things that I pointed out was that why isn't the university, the agricultural department, reaching out to all of the opportunities of job seekers? We should have a job fair where all these companies can come in and explain their needs and meet students that are going to graduate.
Right.
The awareness thing, sometimes puzzling to me, is why is Fresno State not the one that everybody talks about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cal Poly has a water testing, well testing program. They go out all over the valley to farmers and do that. It's subsidized. And why isn't Fresno State doing something like that? And mm-hmm. I'm thinking that there's opportunities to include business people where the name on the tip on the tongue is Fresno State is the place we should go.
Yes.
And I, for one, realize Fresno State in the agricultural department needs to resurrect the water program, water awareness program.
Sure.
Because this is where it is in this valley. So those are one of the things I'm looking at. I'm not trying to challenge the academics in the university, but I think we've missed out letting people know who we are.
And ways that you suggest that things change, what are some suggestions that you would have for
a job fair? I think the media,
mm-hmm.
and there's just a lack of awareness of what Fresno State really does.
Yes, we have so many great programs here, and we're right in the middle of where it all happens.
Yeah, it's all here within this confines. And, you know, it just needs to get, we need to get more exposure.
Yes.
And alumni can do that.
Definitely.
Like myself.
Yes.
and there's a lot of guys that I think if university reach out to them,
mm-hmm.
ag, you'd be shocked how many people out there really want to step up to the plate.
Well, that's exciting. And I know that your involvement has inspired many people to become involved to this point. And hopefully, as you're more involved with the commission and as the word gets out, others will see the positive things that are happening here and want to be a part of it to help our students be successful and to help the university as a whole to rise up within this department. You know, agriculture is so valuable to this region. And like you said, the Fresno State needs to be on the tip of everybody's tongue. Thank you so much for coming in today. I appreciate it. And I could have went on and on with you for another hour, but I really appreciate what you've done for Fresno State and your commitment to making a difference. And it's wonderful to see you there on the sidelines for the games. And I feel like you're a real backbone person for this campus. And I know that President Castro appreciates you being here.
Well, thank you. I really am enjoying life at this stage of my life. This is great.
Great. It's so good to meet you and get to know you better. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks again to our very special guest, Fresno County farmer and Fresno State distinguished alumnus, Marvin Myers. And of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning, and please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Ladies Focus on KFSR. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Ladies Focus every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.